Gina Davis was in some of the quirkiest and most interesting films of the 80s, The Fly and Tootsie, and she's certainly best remembered now for Thelma and Louise, which was groundbreaking in its moment, a saga or a buddy movie about the consequences of women striking back against male violence. Gina Davis has now written a memoir about her life on and off the camera, and she spoke with staff writer Michael Shulman, who covers entertainment.
You may not have seen Gina Davis in a movie lately, but you might have caught her at the Emmy Awards last month, where she was honored for her work with the Gina Davis Institute on Gender in Media. 20 years ago, she was watching TV with her 2-year-old daughter and was shocked to see how few female characters were on screen. She wanted to know how big of a problem this was, so she spearheaded a major research project to gather data on gender representation in children's entertainment. And that's how an Oscar-winning movie star began her new life as what she calls a middle-aged data geek. She would walk into executives' offices armed with numbers, but she wasn't confrontational.
It was polite. It was very polite. My approach was very polite because I said, I know you don't know this. You know, take it, whatever, do whatever you want with it. I just thought, you know, you might like to hear this. And I'm never going to bust you publicly. I'm never going to name a movie or a studio or anything. This is just private between us.
It turns out the politeness is something that Gina Davis has been wrestling with her whole life. And it's one of the subjects of her new memoir, Dying of Politeness. How did you learn politeness and why is it so deadly?
Well, I learned politeness from minute one, I'm sure. I mean, that was my family, you know, very old-fashioned New Englanders, both from Vermont. And, well, it wasn't so much being kind. It was not making anyone go out of their way for you for anything. Never ask for anything, never need anything. But on the other side, offer everything. Like my dad fixed everybody on the street. He fixed their plumbing or their furnace or their car or whatever, you know. It was just in my family.
Right. And when did you realize that there was a kind of downside to politeness?
Well, I mean, it was painful sometimes to say no. You know, if we went to visit friends' houses and they offered me candy, I had to say no. And my best friend's mom was an incredible cook. Oh, she made this chicken with garlic. It was incredible. So anyway, and I'd be smelling that and like, oh, it's time for me to go home for dinner. And she'd say, Gina, do you want to stay? No, thank you. And then she'd call my mom and just say, Lucille, Gina's staying for dinner. All right, talk to you later. So she would rescue me from my own politeness.
I want to talk a little bit about your earlier career. You moved to New York in 1978. What was the plan?
Oh, I knew I wanted to be in movies rather than plays. Nobody told me that if you want to be in movies, you should probably go to LA. So my plan was I would become a model and then people would just offer me movies because at that time, Christie Brinkley was showing up in a couple of movies and Lauren Hutton. And I thought, okay, it's so much easier to become a supermodel than an actor. Well, I mean, I must have assumed that. Which was crazy.
I have to ask you about this. When you were pursuing your modeling career, you were working on Ann Taylor on Fifth Avenue. And, you know, this is not something that an extremely shy, self-effacing person would necessarily do. But you kind of put on your own version of street theater. Can you just explain what happened?
So I tried to look very nice every day, you know, fully made up and hair done and maybe Ann Taylor clothes even. And one weekend, the window display in the front on the street was a couple of mannequins sitting, but there was one empty chair in between them. And I said to one of my friends, dare me to go in the window and pretend to be a mannequin. And I just sneaked in the window and sat down. A couple of people had been looking in the window and saw me do this. And then they're like, what's she going to do? And then more people are coming up. What are you guys looking at? Just wait. And then I finally moved. And they were like, ah, and clap.
I mean, what was motivating you?
Just for kicks, see if I could do it. I mean, I didn't intend to make a thing out of it. I was just going to do it that once. But they started hiring me to do that on Saturdays. you know, like 5 hours in the window.
Ultimately, the model to actor plan kind of worked. I mean, you got your first role in Tootsie through modeling, didn't you?
It completely worked. When they were casting Tootsie, the role that I ended up playing needed to be in her underwear in a couple of scenes. And they thought, well, let's just check if there's any models who can act. So they called all the modeling agencies to see. And my agents said, yes, we have one. And so I got to audition. And they said, wear a bathing suit under your clothes. And so I read, it was just with like an assistant casting director and a video camera. I read and she said, okay, thank you. And I left and I was like, well, that's fine. I didn't do well enough. And plus on my first audition ever, you know, what are the odds I'm going to get in a movie with Dustin Hoffman? And so then I went to Paris to do the collections and Cindy Pollack saw my audition tape and said, hey, wait a minute, I like this girl. Where's her bathing suit stuff? They said, oh, we forgot. Get her back. We can't. She's in Paris. And to my great happiness, I had been in a Victoria's Secret catalog. And so they sent the photos from that over there. So as opposed to being, you know, in Midtown Manhattan in some dingy office building, I had perfectly lit, airbrushed, fan-blowing photos of me in underwear already, and I guess that clinched it.
So much of the arc of the book is about how you learned sort of boldness and bravery and assertiveness from your characters. Mm-hmm. What was an early example of that?
Well, yeah. I had to play someone who was so much bolder than myself. Mm. Accidental Tourist was one where she was very confrontational in a way and said what she thought at the moment she thought it and was not going to give up on things, very tenacious, and wasn't going to take no for an answer.
Right.
And so that was really the first time that I had to really step outside myself.
Muriel Pritchett. Let me give you my card.
Oh, well, I'll bear that in mind. Thank you very much.
Or just call for no reason. Call and talk.
Talk?
Sure. Talk about Edward, his problems. Talk about anything. Pick up the phone and just talk. Don't you ever get the urge to do that?
Not really.
This is your Oscar-winning role as Muriel Pritchett, the dog trainer, opposite William Hurt. And you write about reading the book and immediately wanting to option it yourself.
Right.
I mean, what was it about that character? Was it that sense of wanting to be like her in some way?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, she's so colorful. And I thought, wow, how fun would it be to play this character? Optioning a book, I mean, that wasn't something that was going to happen. But Dustin Hoffman had given me that advice when I was on Tootsie. He said, read a lot of books, and if you see something you like, try to get the rights.
Dustin Hoffman seems to have a lot of advice for you, didn't he?
Yeah, all day long he was giving me advice, yeah.
Because he also told you, if don't sleep with your co-stars, and if they want to say, what was the line?
You want me to tell that story?
Please.
So after Tootsie, my model agent took me and a couple of other actors slash models to Hollywood to meet casting directors, and he happened to know Jack Nicholson. And every single night, Jack Nicholson had dinner with us. And then one day I came back and there was a note under the door that said, please call Jack Nicholson and this number. And I was like, oh, I can't believe it. Jack Nicholson called me? Oh my God. But anyway, I said, hello, Mr. Nicholson. This is Gina, the model. You called me? He said, yeah, hey, Gina. When's it going to happen? And I was like, oh, no. But it immediately came into my head what to say because I'd been holding on to this advice. So I said, oh, Jack, I would love to. You're very attractive. But I have a feeling we're going to work together at some point in the future, and I would hate to have ruined the sexual tension between us. He was like, oh, man, where'd you get that? So it worked.
So getting back to Accidental Tourist, how did that character kind of rub off on you?
I became much more able to be assertive, more than I was, which was profoundly unassertive.
In a way, that seems like a bit of what happened in Thelma and Louise, which is that the off-screen dynamic between you and Susan Sarandon kind of mirrored how Louise emboldens Thelma.
Absolutely, yeah. I was so in awe and admired Susan Sarandon so much. Hmm. And to witness that nobody gave a shit if she said what she thought, you know, that like she never used qualifiers like, I don't know what people would think, or I don't know, this is probably a stupid idea. And that was my life, was a string of qualifiers before I would say anything. So it was the whole shoot was an education for me in how to very calmly and capably say what you want.
I don't know, Louise. I mean, I don't know what you're asking.
Now, don't you start flaking out. I mean, God damn it, Thelma. Every time we get in trouble, you just get blank or pleading sanity or some such shit. Not this time. I mean, this time, things have changed. Everything's changed.
Now, you, of course, are in these two iconic feminist movies, right back to back, Thelma and Louise and A League of Their Own. I mean, they were so impactful.
Oh, yeah. So Thelma and Louise exploded onto the scene. Like Susan and I were on the cover of Time magazine a week later or something. So, and the headline was Why Thelma and Louise Strikes a Nerve. Not why is Thelma and Louise so great.
And then what kind of response do you remember for A League of Their Own?
What I noticed was before it came out, a lot of people came to the set to interview me or us. And during these interviews, it was fascinating because almost every single person, male or female, said, so would you say this is a feminist movie? Kind of in this wink-wink tone, you know, like, and I'd say, yeah, it is. And they'd be like, it is? What? It is? Are you saying you're a feminist? And I'd say, yeah, sure. They couldn't believe I would say that out loud, which is so crazy. But that's how strong the backlash was at that time.
Well, I want to talk about a period in your career that doesn't get as much attention, which is the right after that. You know, we always hear about women in Hollywood turning 40 and suddenly just not getting roles. But I'd sort of like to hear about what exactly happened from your perspective.
It was just absolutely heartbreaking because this is my thing. Hmm. It felt like forced retirement or something. The work just literally dried up. It was incredibly painful.
But it also seems to me like this, that period where you were not working as much was fruitful in other ways because you took up other interests. I mean, one of them was archery. Can you describe how you took up an interest in archery?
So I had to learn how to play baseball for A League of Their Own. And I was really worried about it because I'd never been athletic. So trained with the coaches that they had, and they very soon said, you have some real untapped athletic ability. And I was like, wow, I do. So then I was determined, I want to take up a sport in the real way and not, you know, a movie version of it. And so I picked archery because I saw it on TV during the Olympics in Atlanta, and then total immersion. And yeah, I was a semifinalist for the Olympic trials 2 years later. It was incredible. I really changed my body image and the idea of how much space I could take up in the world, you know, to become athletic and realize that I don't have to be ashamed of how tall I am and ashamed of my body because I can do cool things. So it was very transformative.
Gina Davis talking with Michael Shulman. Her new memoir is called Dying of Politeness.
Gina, this has been so much fun. Thank you. Thank you again. It's great to talk to you.
You too, Michael. I'm sorry I wasn't sometimes very articulate.
That's still dying of politeness.
Oh, my God. You see?